squidgies were almost revered in the high beast tribe. The tiny beasts ran wild over the newly made beds, flinging the covers about and trampling pillows.
What do we have to do to make these rogues sleep, Palum?
Sing a song.
Instantly, the squidgies flung themselves flat on the beds, straightening the covers about them and plumping pillows as they called out. Palum immediately began singing.
Go to sleep, you filthy bunch. I'd love to lay you all out with a punch. How'd you win a mother's heart with a squiggly trunk like an eel's back part? Is that awful smell the reason you haven't been washed all season? So go to sleep in your scruffy beds. May nightmares enter your beastly heads. And when sunlight heralds the new daybreak, may you wake with tummy ache.
Strangely, the squidgies were half asleep. Smiling and yawning, they mumbled.
Very nice, very nice. See no more.
Stifling a chuckle, Grum took over with his deep, soothing bass.
You've a dreadful, horrible crew, and I wouldn't give to you supper nor dinner, breakfast nor tea. I'd spank the daylights out of ye, and I'd make ye wash 10 times each day, till you'm bad manners were scrubbed away.
Tiny snores announced that the squidgies were all asleep. Rose mopped her brow with relief.
Phew, thank the seasons the little monsters are finished for the day. Small wonder their mothers don't look after them.
Palum pointed to some spare mattresses in the corner.
All right, you can stop smiling now and get some rest. Lie there and relax. I'll go and get some supper for us. I think I saw a big mixed fruit pudding with cream and some new cider.
Grum flopped down thankfully, swiftly followed by Martin and Rose. Their wooden hobbles clacked together noisily, and Rose winced as she held up a paw.
Shh! Not so much noise! You might waken the monsters.
Brr! I'd throw myself off any cliff top if they waked.
From slavery to slavery in one easy paw step. Where will it end?
Martin sighed loud and long. Rose shook his paw comfortingly.
In Noonvale someday. We won't be here all our lives with a warrior like you about, Martin. Being a nursemaid is not in your stars. I wonder what became of Brome and Feldo. They'll have drifted into land, no doubt. That Feldo is a good, tough squirrel. I know he'll look after my brother. I hope they're safe and well.
Martin could hardly keep his eyes open as he watched Palum approach, bearing a heavily laden tray.
Wherever Feldo and Brome landed up, they couldn't possibly be worse off than us. Nursemaids to those tiny rogues.
Chapter 12.
An alliance had been made between Badrang the Tyrant and Cap'n Tram and Clog. Still not trusting each other, the two villainous stoats affixed their signatures to a sprawling birch bark parchment, Badrang writing his name in a curly, flourishing script, whilst Clog laboriously scrawled an X and a crude sketch of a wooden clog, his mark. It was witnessed by Gurd the Rat for Marshank and Boggs the Ferret for the Corsairs. Tramon repeated the terms as he and the tyrant took a joint beaker of best parsley wine.
Arr! So as I sees it, you're going to call off your troops and lend me some slaves to refurbish and refloat my ship. Meself, on the other paw, won't attack, harass, or demand slaves from you. I'm to understand that the slaves you lend me is still yours and have to be returned, right?
Badrang sipped his wine and nodded, tapping the parchment.
Aye, agreed. And don't forget all this. At such times as you have a seaworthy craft to sail off in, I keep half of your crew as hostages. When or if you return, having taken more slaves, then they get divided equally between us, and you get your hostages returned to give you a full crew.
Clog stroked his plaited whiskers, narrowing one eye.
Fairly said, partner, fairly said. And I can feed me crew from your supplies and belt them here in your fancy fort, though I'm never to tell other corsairs or sea rats, as I may come across on the high seas the location of this here place.
Badrang nodded, refilling Clog's beaker.
Right. But don't forget, Tremon, after the first cargo of slaves is split between us, you guarantee to sell any further slaves from other voyages only to me. I'll give you the best of weapons, trade goods and supplies.
Clog slopped one as he threw back his head and drained a beaker, then draped a paw around Badrang's shoulders.
Ha ha! Just like in the good old days, eh, matey?
The tyrant reciprocated by throwing his paw about Clog's neck.
Aye, as you say, just like in the good old days, Tremon. But this time there'll be no underpaw dealings, traitors, nor spy beasts.
Spy beasts? I never use spy beasts, matey.
The pirate stolt adopted a look of injured innocence.
There, there.
Badrang patted Clog's neck affectionately.
I know you haven't. There's nothing worse than a spy beast. Why, if I thought there was one in my fortress, I'd tie him to the gates and let my archers use him for target practice. Look, just like that fox over yonder.
He turned Clog's neck with his paw so that the corsair was looking at the inside of Marshank's main gates. The carcass of Skalrag hung there, stuck with so many arrows it was like a pincushion. Even though he was seething inwardly, Clog grinned from ear to ear.
Foxes was ours, traitors. We never liked that one.
Badrang tightened his grip on Clog's neck momentarily, then released him. The tyrant matched the corsair, grin for grin.
Neither did I, matey. Neither did I.
Early morning sun bathed the shore beyond the headland, promising a high, hot day. Roanoke harnessed herself between the shafts of the Rosehip's gaily painted cart, and they moved further along the shoreline, away from the close proximity of Marshank. Feldo and Brome enjoyed the company of the rambling Rosehip creatures greatly. They had been accepted immediately as friends and possible members. By mid-morning, they had set up their camp on the cliff tops, where they had an excellent view of the area without revealing their presence. The Hare, Balor de Quinswold and Roanoke were in close confidence, whilst the rest unpacked and prepared lunch. Brome helped Gouchy and Caston to prepare a leek and bean soup, sniggering with the two mice as they watched a pretty squirrel, Celandine, trying to flirt shamelessly with the much-embarrassed Feldo as he unloaded the cart, blushing to his tail-tip at her simpering compliments.
Oh, Mr. Feldo, you're so strong. You lifted that trunk as if it were no more than a feather. I'll bet you must be the most powerful squirrel in the whole country.
Feldo was completely lost for words. He turned away from the cart and started breaking some driftwood up for the fire. Celandine dabbed at her brow with a dainty lace square.
Oh my, oh my, I'd be all season just trying to break one teensy piece of that wood with an axe. And look at you, sir, snapping it in those great paws of yours, like it was dead grass.
Trefoil, the other squirrel maid, unceremoniously bundled a pile of tunics at Celandine.
Here, missy, get your paws wet, washing those through, and leave the poor fellow alone before he turns into a beetroot.
The temptress flounced off in a huff, laden with dirty washing. Trefoil began snapping wood alongside Feldo.
Take no notice of her, friend. I've seen her fluttering in her eyelashes at dragonflies.
Buckle of the Mole was erecting the awning as the sun shade.
Brr, I seem a girt flutterer, that'n,
he chuckled.
I loosed my heart to her long seasons agone. Her, but she'm a fine actress, too.
The food was good and simple, hot soup followed by wheat flour pancakes spread with wild honey. The company lounged beneath the awning, eating and drinking cool mint and buttercup cordial from an old stone jar. Roanoke shook her great head.
What in the name of treason turnips made us ramble this far up the land, I'll never know. We had good times in the south, friendly creatures to entertain, nice places to stop a while.
Balor the Hare made a pancake disappear with alarming speed.
True, true. But what's a chap got up here in this barren neck of the woods? Fortresses, tyrants and corsairs. Bit thick, isn't it, what? About the only decent thing was meeting you two jolly lads.
The rest of the company murmured agreement. Roanoke stared patiently at the Hare. Balor carried on guzzling cordial, unaware that he had interrupted her flow.
If you're quite finished, Mr. de Quinswold.
Balor dispatched another pancake, daintily licking honey from his paws.
Not finished eating with these pancakes, Rowan, me old oak. But don't let me stop you talking. You eat less when you talk. Ho, ho.
The badger eyed him frostily before continuing.
Thank you. Now, what I have to say concerns our new friends, Feldo and Brome. Here is what I propose. We're up here anyway, for better or worse, so we may as well do something useful. It goes without saying that we will keep our eyes peeled for any sign of their companions, Brome's sister, Martin and the mole, Grum. But meanwhile, as Feldo has told us, his father, Barkjohn, is a slave in that dreadful fortress. Ooh, it makes my blood boil when I think of a creature being enslaved, robbed of freedom, beaten, starved, and forced to labour for some jumped-up villain. What do you think?
There was an instant chorus of agreement with Roanoke.
Shame, poor old Barkjohn.
It's a flaming liberty, what?
Yeah, no beast should be slave to another.
Oh, I can't imagine it. We've always been free.
It's disgraceful, that horrid stoat.
Roanoke let them carry on working up their indignation before carrying on with her speech. When they had done, she continued.
When Balor and I formed the Rambling Rosehip Players, we took on only talented creatures we knew we could rely on. I personally have never been disappointed in any of you. That is why today we are all gathering...
Oh, stop taking a bally sea voyage to get round a cockle shell, old girl. We all want to rescue Feldo's old pater, don't we?
Aye.
Good show. Then let's stop jaw-banging and get to it, what?
Roanoke passed Balor the pancakes and honey. She was smiling.
Thank you, Bal, you old rascal. Now we need a strategy. And you know the best way that a travelling company can scout the land?
Buckler held up a sticky digging claw.
Yes, ma'am. Usn't go there and put on his show.
What?
Feldo spluttered on his drink.
Now just hold fast a moment, friends. It's very kind of you to offer to rescue my dear old dad. But we've an appointment with Martin in Noonvale. Our plan is to raise an army and free all the slaves. And anyway, you'd last as long as a leaf on a bonfire at Marshank.
Caston, the mousemaid, chuckled.
Oh, listen, Squirrel. If you'd been half the places we've been and done a quarter of the things we've done, you'd know better.
Cha! I'd say you would, old lad. Gouchy, remember we put on the caution of the frog and the caterpillar for all those fierce toads in the south swamps?
Do I ever?
The mousemaid nibbled a carrot, shaking with mirth.
With you playing the villainous toad, Uncle? I thought those toads were so enraged they were going to toss us in the swamp.
Celandine giggled.
And they would have, too. Good job they let Celandine butterfly tie them all up with the magic rope that would make them all handsome.
The whole company fell about laughing as Caston pointed at Roanoke.
That was when Badger Bountiful hoisted them all up into a tree and told them they too would turn into beautiful butterflies and fly away.
Ho, 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 you should have seen their bally faces when we ate all their feast and went off leaving them all hanging from a tree, waiting to turn into butterflies. Ho, ho, ho.
When the laughter had subsided, Roanoke winked at Feldo and Brome.
No need to worry about us. We know what we're doing.
Feldo grasped the badger's paw.
I don't know how to thank you.
Trefoil was rummaging in the cart.
Oh, don't thank us. We won't be doing it all on our own. You two will be taking part in the show.
Brome leapt up in alarm.
But they'd recognise us right off.
Caston placed a huge frog mask over the young mouse's head.
There, your own mama wouldn't recognise you now.